Session number 22680.
Dogbotting Real 2. Can you describe what the fighting was like to be involved in, as far as you were concerned?
Well, I think any fighting is bad, and it's a job at that time which you had to do. You listened to your COs and told what to do, and you, well, frankly, you follow on like a lot of sheep, if I'm honest. And as I say, I was nervous every time I went in until I got in. I think street fighting was probably a very bad part of the war. Going in, you didn't know what you was going to find behind closed doors. Germans were very good at mining, very good at putting booby traps on people, even their own, so that you had to be very, very careful. I had a terrible fear of stepping on a mine. But once again, we were told, and our training was that if you hear a click, and it depends on how far all your pals were, either side, if you were close, you kept your foot on it, standing a chance of just losing a leg. If there was quite a distance between you, you yell out for people to drop and dive forward, because a mine will go up to about 4 foot and then explode, and all the what's inside, the ball bearings, rusty nails, will all come out, and there's a possibility you'll live, more often than not. But that was a terrible fear for me, was a mine. And taking mines up from the ground was another one. I used to get very hot doing that, where you prod very carefully with your bayonet, and moving this soil and earth away, and taking the mine out the ground. That used to make me sweat a bit.
Why did you, rather than the Royal Engineers, have to do that?
Well, they weren't always there. I mean, if you were trying to clear a pathway for the rest of the chaps behind you, you can't always wake up, make way for the engineers. They follow up eventually. But sometimes you're in a position where the engineers weren't there.
Did you remove many mines from the ground?
Oh, I wouldn't say many, maybe six or seven, that's all, but certainly not a lot, but it certainly made me sweat on every one. So I think I had a thing about mines. I didn't like them, and a fear of them.
Was this in Normandy?
Oh, yes, 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 mainly in Normandy, mainly. But,
were they anti-personnel mines?
Oh, a lot of them were, yes. But you were trained well enough to take them, but it still doesn't alter the fact they made me nervous when I had to remove them very carefully. Same with grenades in the beginning, but I got used to handling grenades, so that didn't matter quite so much. But, we used to go in and fire a few rounds, because the Germans, we were told, didn't like this happening at night, and they were very nervous. Well, I think we all were, but we used to go in there, and we were allowed to go in what they call going in light, with just your type of plimsoll shoes on if you wanted, and we used to have a woolen scarf which you turn inside and make a hat, which we used to wear. We used to go in with that, and just a few rounds of ammunition and some grenades, and go in and basically make a lot of noise and then come out. We've done one or two of those sort of recces, but always doing them, really.
Like a recce patrol?
Yes, yes, oh yes. Yes, we've done one or two of those sort of things.
What was the countryside like that you were operating in?
Very flat, very flat. In France it was certainly very flat. I could never understand why we always seemed to get along by the side of railway lines. I could never understand on the beaches why we moved back into, or I particularly moved back into an underground which the Germans had built on this mortar area. And it's all dug underground with all, like tree trunks all around the walls, for walls. Most comfortable in a sense in there. Now one of the chaps, there was an explosion, the ground shook, and when we went over, it's one of the lads had actually sat on a mine. And somebody said, well, you better go up and see the MO about that. And he went up, and a couple of hours later, he came back, and he said, "So what are you doing back then?" He said, well, the MO just stuck a plaster on it and said, oh, you're all right. And he was like that for a couple of weeks. And then they sent him back to England. Well, he was operated and sent back to England. In fact, I met him on Colchester Station after I'd been wounded. I was just going for some treatment. He was going back out there again. He got away with it. Just stung his bottom, so he's dead lucky.
After sitting on a mine?
Yeah. All the MO done was stuck a plaster on his rear end and said, right, you're okay. Yeah.
And he was in your company?
Oh, yes, he was in the company, yeah. Oh, yes.
What was the weather like in Normandy?
In the beginning, it wasn't too bad in the beginning. Not too bad, what I remember of it. We had a bit of rain and things, but...
Did you have to sleep in the open?
Oh, yes. That's why you appreciate a bed. Oh, yes. That another thing I could never understand, you got soaking wet and yet you never got a cold. So that must mean that we were remarkably fit.
Did you take part in any of the well-known operations in Normandy, like Goodwood and Epsom and so on?
Oh, yes. Yes, the Seine crossing, I was on the Seine crossing. That was a bit of a nightmare.
What happened then?
Well, lost an awful lot of people there. Trying to cross the Seine, a lot of... yes, it was... Seine crossing was very bad on the boats we had, and they were quite heavy. They were a type of canvas boats, which virtually took a half a regiment to drag down to the water, but so many of them were shot up, and lads going in the water. All the lads that I could see, I never saw one chap swim back. They all swam over. Bravery, absolute brave. And from there, it was...
Was that when you were with the Berkshires, or had you changed the
regiment? This was actually just changed over with the Wiltshire Regiment, the 5th Wiltshires.
Did you cross in a canvas boat yourself?
In actual fact, I went over in a type of rowing boat. It wasn't a canvas boat. And we were told, because we were told... I think it was in a school where we were informed about this, that we would go over and grab anything we could, but we got to get over. And there were so many lives lost there.
How many of you were in your boat?
Oh, 6 or 7, I think, as far as I can remember, 6 or 7. I know I had a young captain that was in there with us, because we should have... He wanted me to swim over there, and we tried, but the current took us away just to investigate and see how many, what we could see over the other side. But I know it took us down, this captain and I took us down in the water, but current was so, they didn't think it was so strong. It was strong. So he was in there as well, but I understand, I don't know how true it is, that he lost both his hands, but I can't remember his name. But I know he came from Reading, and I know he was a Berkshire man in the beginning, in the Berkshire Regiment.
But he transferred to the Wiltshires like you?
Oh yes, he was in the Wiltshires as well, as far as I know. Yes, he was.
And... Were you crossing in the darkness or daylight?
It was early morning, daylight, early morning going over. But
was your boat hit?
No, I think we did get hit, and we finished up on a bit of an island, but we managed to get over to the other side from the island. There was a little bit of an island there. I think it was nylon or mud flap or something. But it got hit, I think, but we were... Somehow we got this going again, I think it was the outboard motor or something that this had on it. I mean, a lot of them were using oars. But we eventually got over there. But that was a bit of a nightmare as well.
Could you see the Germans who were firing at you?
Oh, yes. Yes, we could see where the bullets were coming from and the shells were coming from. But...
Did you have any artillery cover?
Oh, yes, there was artillery. Well, there was mortar cover, and I think there was artillery, but there's certainly mortar cover. Oh, yes. But...
Did you shoot back with your own weapons?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yes. And, of course, there was a bit of infighting once we got in there a bit more. But,
what kind of infighting?
Well, there were one or two houses there, and going into the houses, which I was always cautious of in houses, because there's a... I said, you never know what's behind that door. You know, you kick the door open and you just don't know what to expect. But,
what was the name of the place where you crossed, do you know?
I think it was this side of Givney, is it Givney? Where the artist was. You remember? Yeah, Givney, I think. I know there was a sort of a track down to the water. Houses here. I remember that.
So what happened once you got to the other side?
Well, eventually we were relieved by... I think we were relieved by the 4th Somersets, I think, Light Infantry. I think we were. I think they relieved us. So we always seemed to be sort of, they would overtake us, we would overtake them. We were always sort of together. I think it was the 4th Somerset Light Infantry.
Yeah. Which platoon and company of the Wiltshires were you in?
I was with the 5th Wiltshires again. The 5th and also B Company.
B Company again?
Yeah. Yes. Yes,
Do you remember the names of anybody who was with you in that unit?
Chambers, I think. Jackie Chambers was one. Griffin or Griffiths was another one. There was a chap from the West Country, I can't think of his name. Very high coloured. Just can't remember his name.
What happened as you pushed through northern France to the north of the Seine?
Yeah, well, we eventually... Where did we finish up? I think we went to Gasny. I think that's where Flanagan and Allen came over to entertain us, and Kay Cavendish, piano player, lady, very tall lady. Flanagan and Allen, which one is it? Flanagan, he must have been in the First World War, because I remember... He was wearing his medals. He had all his medals on. And they entertained us there. I think we turned up, although we were already in it. A lot of other Berkshires turned up there, I think, and joined, linked up, because some were being transferred over to the Wiltshires. And then from there, I think it was pushing on. We had so many miles to catch them up, because we had a... They gave us a bit of a rest because we'd lost so many troops, I think. And we went through to Belgium, I think, catching them up. But that was on lorries. I remember them. Chaps were picking, you know, the people were clapping us as we drove through the towns. They picking them up and putting them on the trucks. And I always remember one midget, and nobody else seems to know this midget. I've spoken several times, but a little chap, and he was on a scooter, and he followed us for miles, this young midget fellow. But
this was a Belgian civilian?
I think they were all Belgians then, yes, because they were bringing out beer, which I thought was, the flavour of it was very sweet. You know, so it got a lot of sugar in it. And from there, I think we finished up at Elst, near Nijmegen, near the Arnhem. So we was at Elst, we weren't actually in Arnhem. We were elsewhere. A lot of the gliders had landed, and I know they caught our headquarters there and blew that up, a shell. I remember carrying ammunition there, and I know on one of the nights I had to go over the level crossing and dig in where some of the troops are there, not our. Well, I think it must have been some of our regiment, as I went over to get in this trench, and there was a tall fella. I knew his face, very tall chap, and he was kneeling as if he was going to go in the trench. And I had to try and push him out the way. He was as stiff as a board. He'd been killed how long, I don't know. But the strange part about it, his rifle was polished like chrome. And, you know, you must never do that, because, you know, they can see this miles away, and the light will reflect, and probably that's the reason he got killed, I imagine. But I had to push him out of the way, and I said, well, when am I going to be relieved? And they said, you'll be relieved about 11 o'clock at night. And, you know, the trench absolutely stunk, to be honest. I can smell it now. And anyway, 11 o'clock came, and then it was about 4:30, and somebody was, and there was a chap with a Scottish accent that said, I've come to relieve you. And I was out of that hole like grease lightning, I tell you, and back. And I remember when we came back, the army cook had, we'd gone into a barn, and he'd opened a tin of sausages. Well, I can remember these sausages now. I never had sausages like it. The flavour was out of this world, you know. So we had something warm inside us that morning. But
this was at Elst?
This was at Elst, yeah. Level crossing. And I've since been back there, and I didn't realise there was two crossings there. And one of the lads belonging to the market garden married a Dutch girl and lady, Elizabeth, I think her name was, and as we drove round, I said, well, I don't remember any of this. And then, of course, when we came up the other one, I said, ah, it rings a bell. And I said, oh, but there used to be a hut there. And she said, you're quite right, Douglas, there was a hut there. And which made me feel good, because I thought, oh, well, at least some of it's come back and it's true. And the town hall, I remember the town hall there. On the steps, that's still there. That was at Elst. So we came out of there, and where did we go? I think we went into Nijmegen then, and I think we went to Mook, M-O-O-K, up this track, and we used to look across the Rijksveld. And when we go back there, quite honest, I say a silent prayer, and I do ask for forgiveness, because I felt responsible. So we had an artillery chap with us who used to phone up his boss, whoever it was, and if we saw anything, we were looking through the binoculars, and I used to watch these two Germans. One was a huge German, the other one was a little chap carrying a Red Cross standard. And I think, I understand that it's where they used to send all the Germans to recuperate who had stomach problems. And anyway, I saw this movement when various lorries going in and out of there without a Red Cross marking on it. And I said to this chap, I said, you better have a look there and contact your boss, because, you know, there's trucks going in and out of there. I'm not so sure that they're bringing in troops. I understand that's what they were doing. But he said, yeah, I see what you mean. And he got through, and within, well, minutes, shells were coming over from our side, you know, boom, 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 going over there, plastering them. And that's why I felt responsible. I might have been responsible for an awful lot of happenings there. I don't know. You know, so that was not very nice.
You mean you think it might have hit their medical casualties?
Well, I think it might have, you know, it might have hit the, well, it was lives. Anybody that was there that was in the way were being caught. And I felt responsible because I'd seen it through the glass. I know it was my job, but I mean, you still, you know, years have gone by and you wonder, and, you know, just one of those things, isn't it, now?
Where was that?
That was looking over from Mook across to the right veld, because there was a huge dip there, and where all the trees and everything were there. Yeah.
So you were on lookout duty?
Oh, yes. Yes, I was then, yes. Oh, yeah. Yes.
Which month do you think that might have been?
Which month? I don't know, September, probably September. I think it was around about September, maybe. Yes, it got to be September, October.
What do you remember happening next?
I think I can remember going from there probably to... excuse me, please. Lent, I think, probably going over to Lent on the other side of Arnhem, because we put a headquarters up there. And from there, it's across where the River Wall is. From there, I think it was Goosebeck and places like that. We had times we spent in these various places. And then I think the next thing I remember is Tripsrath, I think, where I probably got wounded. I mean, there were a lot of little things went on in between. I know there's a mining village at one time where we stayed on the borders of Germany near Gilkirchen, I think it is called, and Biden. And I think... I think it was the Tripsrath one, where we had a headquarters at Tripsrath, and there was the Somersets, the artillery, all sorts of various people there. The 4th and the 5th Wilts were there, I think. Certainly we were. And I know our NCO had come back, and he said, oh, I think it was the Dorsets that had taken Tripsrath. And he came back and he said, oh, there's still a pocket of Germans down there, I want them out. And that's when a section of us went in. And my particular section, or the section I was in, this German stood up and one of the chaps fired at him and he went down. And we had this low wall and... all of a sudden they started to open fire, which I think was bazookas, at us, at this wall. And we dug some bricks behind, the wall behind, and went in there. And then later on we decided we'd get out. And we came out, there was only 10 of us. We came out, and that's where I got wounded. And anyway, they got me back.
How were you wounded? What exactly happened?
Well, I had 4 bullets in the abdomen. I'd done 4 gunshot wounds in the abdomen where I believe it was 2.5 inches off my bowels, a fractured iliac, a piece off the right hip. And they got me down into a cellar. They got me back to a house. One of the chaps had run back into enemy lines. nine of us got back. They got me in the cellar, and I know I wanted a drink, and they was about to give me a drink. And somebody came in and said, he hasn't got stomach wounds, has he? And he said, yeah. Well, no, you mustn't give him a drink. So that was stopped, thank goodness. And this chap said, who is it? And they said, oh, it's Doug. And they said, oh, well, get him a stretcher, quick. And they said, well, one of the stretcher bearers had been taken prisoner, and the other one was out. And he said, well, I'll get him a stretcher. And he went out, and I believe he was the old man's Jeep driver. And he said, put him on there, I'll get him to the MO. And they put me on top of this, and I know all over the bumps, oh, it's terrible agony. And they got me to the MO, who said, oh, hospital straight away. And I know I kept saying, looking at my hands, and I kept saying, I'm all right, Doc, and that's my wife. I'm all right, and I swore a lot about these, what they'd done to me. Excuse me. And then I remember in the hospital, the surgeon, who was a Scottish chap, said, where's the pain there, the laddie? And I said, oh, all across here. And he said, all right, we'll soon put that right. And that was all I remember of that. And the next day, I know one of the orderlies said, well, you're a bit of a lad, Doug. You wake up in the middle of the operation, demanded to know what the devil was going on. Well, I don't remember any of that. And I remember, I don't know where it was they took us, but I remember it was in a basement which was being shelled continuously. Must have been a hospital. But there was nuns used to walk through with children every morning and come back in the afternoon. I remember seeing them there. And I remember the surgeon came round and he said, I suppose it's all right to say all this on there, is it?
Yes.
Have you passed wind yet, laddie? And I said, no, not yet, sir. And he'd say, I want to know when you've passed wind. Right, sir. So when it happened, I said, oh, I passed wind, sir. Good lad. Now I want to know when you've had a motion because of the bowels. Because apparently what he'd actually done was he'd joined my bowels together. Another chap, a Geordie, had had a similar wound before me, and I finished up in the next bed to him. Now, he'd had a colostomy, but this surgeon had joined my bowels together, which was unheard of, that operation in those days. You know, you've got to realise this is over 50 years ago. Completely unheard of, and he was congratulated by very senior bigwigs that came down to shake his hand. And then he said, when I told him I'd had a motion, he said, wait there, lad, don't go away. And all of a sudden he came back with a bottle of champagne. He said, that's for being a good lad, one glass a day, with a bottle of champagne. I'd love to meet him. I don't know whether he's still alive. I wished I knew who it was. What a man. But and then from there, they, thanks to penicillin as well, which was injected every 4 hours, and I do mean every 4 hours, through the night, as well as day, on the train, anywhere. And from there we went to Brussels, and I was in the hospital there. And I know an American chap was in the next bed with a cannon shell by the side of his bed. And apparently this chap was from a flying fortress. And he bowed out, and I think the skipper said, well, he said, I'd done so many crash landings, I didn't want to do any more. And the skipper said, well, anybody want to bow out, they can, because there's another crash landing. So he bowed out, and he actually landed right smack in front of the steps of the hospital in Brussels. Got up and went up a couple of stairs and collapsed, and they got him and took this cannon shell out of him. I'm not joking, it was about this size, you think.
You mean about four or 5 inches?
Yes. And he said, he let off alarming because he wanted to go back to England by boat, and they were going to fly him, and he didn't like that. He let off alarmingly about that. But of course, then I was flown home by Dakota, I think it was Swindon, and then I went I went to Ronkswood Hospital at Worcester, and I was on my back there for a long time. Then I eventually got a chair, and then I got a couple of crutches, and then two crutches, one crutch, and then walking stick, which I still got. And that was an issue for me, and got put on a charm.